Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you're going to hear this introduction again and again because it's not Groundhog Day. It's that I have a pre-recorded interview with Lynn McTaggart across the Atlantic Ocean. I wanted to play it today because she's going to do an intention experiment on March 29th. And in that experiment, she's having people sign up. It's kind of like Eckhart Tolle and Oprah, and having a lot of people signing up to do around-the-world kind of meditation or around-the-world understanding, around-the-world learning. She's doing an around-the-world intention to have an impact on the ecosystem that has been the example of it is being done by Dr. Gary Schwartz in Tucson. And she's having all these people sign up, and at a certain time of day, everybody's going to focus and focus certain intentions regarding your the weather, the temperatures, the balanced ecology, and so on. It's very exciting, and that's coming up on March 29th. So I say to you that my intentions were, I think, sabotaged a little bit by my perhaps inner child, or maybe my lives and the Pleiades and Arcturus and who knows what all. But sometimes my intention in talking to you right now is to say that I know that this is a rather low recording. We had a little technical trouble with it. But I also wanted to say to pay attention to your intentions and how you're sending out your thoughts in the world, because in my case, this is a very good example of what was deep inside of me was pulling back against what I was trying to do on the outside. And that's why some of this didn't work out too well. So it's a good research experiment of our own, isn't it? A scientific experiment. The art of using intention, or art of using the law of attraction, the art of using any spiritual laws, is in truth the art of pulling up what's sabotaging you way down deep in the subconscious. And I just wanted to say all that before we give over to Seth, who's going to run this wonderful interview with Lynn McTaggart. Please forgive some of the technological doodah going on. If any of you'd like to write to me about it, it's Veronica Entwistle, ENTWISTLE.com, Veronica@VeronicaEntwistle.com, and I'd love to hear from you about this subject or about radiance. So, here we go. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters here on BBS Radio. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and the role of Paradigm Shifters is to introduce you to some people that are having a huge impact on the collective of our consciousness on this planet. And today I'm really honored to present Lynn McTaggart of The Field and the Intention Experiment. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
No, it's wonderful to be able to talk to you. I've been reading, I've been listening to Living in the Field and reading a lot of your downloads and websites and so on, and also just been reading The Intention Experiment, and I'm very excited about it all. Do you want to tell everybody what The Intention Experiment is? Or it's pretty hard to put it in a thumbnail because it's a product of a lot of research, isn't it?
It certainly is. I began looking into this material in the mid-90s because I was, I am editor of a newsletter called What Doctors Don't Tell You, and I study the medical literature every week to find out what works and what doesn't work in conventional and alternative medicine. And in the course of doing that, I kept finding really good studies of spiritual healing and homeopathy, all demonstrating that this stuff works. And I kept thinking to myself, if there is scientific evidence of homeopathy and spiritual healing, if you can just send a thought to someone else and have that person get better, then there must be something basic in the way, and very different in the way our world works that we don't understand yet. So that set me off on a quest to find out what that was, and I began speaking to scientists around the world and discovered that each of them were working on a tiny piece of the same puzzle, and that when put together, it compounded into a completely new view of the world, and that the old scientific story that I had been used to...
And you're trained in science, are you?
Sorry?
You're trained in science?
No, I'm not. I'm a journalist. I'm an investigative reporter.
Mm.
And that was the other strange thing for me. I mean, I have been studying and writing about medical stuff for about more than 20 years now. So, you know, I have learned and understood medical science by studying it and reading it and reading medical literature every week. But I'm not a scientist, nor have I been trained in physics. I haven't even taken high school physics.
Well, you do have a wonderful investigative approach to writing because you have a lot of detail on how you built up your case.
Well, thank you. And I guess that technique, that kind of fact-based, evidence-based approach has never left me.
Hmm.
And so in looking at this whole area, the new physics, I had to study quantum physics. I had to talk to scientists many times, 18, 19, 20 times apiece, to have them, in a sense, tutor me in how this works and for me to understand it. And I suppose one of the advantages is that I'm not a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists think and speak in code. They speak in math. They speak in strange language. And, you know, the ordinary layperson really can't understand what they're talking about. So for me, it was all about trying to understand that and then put it in a metaphoric way that people could understand. And so I wrote it as a story, and I felt that that was the best way to do it. If I snuck in the science but told it as the story of some of these discoverers and a journey of discovery, that would bring people into the whole subject.
I think that's wonderful. Yeah, well, it was very complex, a lot of it. Well, you were doing a lot of it with the field as well, right, to discover that.
That was my first journey. That's what I'm really talking about with the field, and this is all a preface for what the intention experiment is.
And to encapsulate the field is that there's kind of an aura of consciousness that goes all around the world, which you call the field, right?
There's an actual quantum energy field called the field that unites us all like an invisible web, and it's a subatomic energy field of which we are part. And it's caused by the dance of particles who send energy back and forth like a game of tennis, an endless game of tennis. And in that exchange, another third particle is formed, a virtual particle. And it is there for a little fleeting instant, but it's information-based. And when you calculate all of the subatomic tennis games going on between all the subatomic particles in the universe, you come up with this giant, just unfathomable amount of energy in empty space, just sitting there like some supercharged backdrop.
Oh my.
And it's quite amazing to contemplate. But there was another really important implication in the field that was a bit of unfinished business. It was the implication that consciousness is an actual physical entity with the capacity to change physical matter. And it was that I wanted to explore in the intention experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And also ask the question, you know, what is intention? How far can you go with it? Can you actually, you know, send yourself up in the air with your thoughts? Can you train in its tracks with your thoughts? And also, and most importantly, can you do anything to change the catalog and alleviate the catalog of suffering out there on the planet? So I really wanted to find out any of this, and I recognized that I wanted to look at the whole idea of group consciousness too, and so I began digging to see all about the science of intention. And I found that in terms of lots of people thinking the same thought at the same time, and whether there was a bigger effect, which was my real interest, there was interesting evidence, but nothing conclusive.
Except that one thing I read that I absolutely love, and I'm going to tell my partner about this, which is a united couple of, I think you said in this experiment, of opposite sex, made 3.5 times an impact on an intention as a single, as an independent. I think that's wonderful information, don't you?
I think that's a really interesting possibility because it does show that, you know, that there is this bonding creates more energy in some way. And I think it's very interesting to look at the differences between the sexes in terms of how it affects intention.
Hmm. And I guess you haven't got any more
in that too. But I was really interested in group effects.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't conclusive evidence. So my partner turned to me one night, and he said, "Why don't you do these experiments yourself?" And I, you know, I thought that was preposterous, not being a scientist. But, and the last time I'd run an experiment was something like 10th grade, you know, biology class. But then I started thinking about it, and I realized I have readers all over the world. And if I could invite them to come online and just do these intention experiments with us, we'd have the largest global laboratory in the world.
Wonderful.
So that's what we're doing. So it's not only an experiment, but it's also it's an experiment, and it's a book. It's a living book, in a sense, that carries on for the reader.
And you're using the scientific, reproducible format kind of thing, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, we're working with very serious scientists in prestigious laboratories at universities around the world.
Were they enthusiastic?
Oh, yeah, they loved the idea. I mean, they thought it was... I think initially some of the scientists were a little skeptical, but our response has been even greater than I expected. I mean, I didn't think it was going to work as well as it did. I mean, I committed myself in the book to saying, I'm going to report whatever we get, no matter whether it's positive or negative. And we've had some pretty remarkable events so far.
Well, let's back up just for a minute for groundwork. I'm thinking back on some of the keeping track of the electrical impulses, or keeping track of the energy around certain subjects, like, for example, 9/11, just before the planes hit, there was a huge impact on the machines that were measuring conscious thought, a huge impact just before it, a traumatic impact before it happened, right? And that, to me, I sort of am questioning. I'm just fascinated by that. Like, somewhere deep down, we know that something's going on. We know that something's happening before it happens, right?
You mean the sense of premonition of a feeling intention?
Yeah, or something deep in the human psyche that actually knows a lot more than we think it does. You know what I mean?
I think, yes. And I think the zero-point field is a wonderful way of explaining that, because if we're all part of this subatomic energy dance and part of this field, then, you know, a subatomic wave is infinite. It carries on to infinity, and it has an infinite capacity to store information. So the field is, in a sense, a shadow of everything that ever happened. It's a repository of all information in the world,
mm-hmm.
and it's getting smarter every day.
But it also must
experience.
Have. But it has more premonition capacity than we expect as well.
Sure, and we can tap into it. We tap into that information bank, and what is becoming apparent with some of the science is that we are not limited by our five senses.
Mm-hmm.
We have great ability to perceive information on an extrasensory way, and we also have a great effect on the world at every moment with our thoughts. So,
and one more
premonitions are very common. You know, they're not just those that are available to the gifted, nor is intention just available to the gifted.
Well, and I want to go to your experiment, but I want to say one more thing, because your book is getting my brain twirling in a lot of directions, and I am an intuitive, so I'm accustomed to running around in the altered states of America, right? And I'm thinking back on parts where you say that people can be influenced or affected. Like, for example, somebody had a terrible illness 5 years ago. You can go in and do healing on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
you mean this whole idea of retro intention?
Yeah. Like, I'm going, okay, so we're not dealing with the normal time frames here, whether it's premonition or intending something that's already happened to be more gentle, right?
Well, the whole point is that we perceive of time as an arrow and time as something absolute, you know, that that time marches forward in a one-way direction from cradle to grave. But the new evidence demonstrates that time is only a human construct, and that the real time is something a little bit more to akin to one great big smeared out now. Because, I mean, there have been many, many studies of people trying to influence something after it's happened. And that sounds so impossible, but they've it's actually worked. I'll give you an example. There was an amazing study by an Israeli professor named Leonard Begovici. He wanted to discredit alternative medicine, so he came up with what he thought was the most outrageous study he could. He had a bunch of patients who were in the hospital for sepsis, blood infection, and he divided the group in half and sent prayer to half of them. When he looked at their results afterward, he discovered that those patients who had been prayed for were better in every way. They had fewer complications, they got sent home earlier, all of that. But there was one very interesting kicker to the study. Those who were, the patients had been in the hospital between the years 1992 and 94. The study and the prayer was carried out in the year 2000, 6 to 8 years later. In other words, the prayer was sent to patients who had already left the hospital, but they had been randomly selected, and when studied, those and it had been controlled very well for all kinds of confounding things that would have been coincidence. And when they actually looked at it, those patients who were sent prayer had been better. So, and better in every way.
Had been better since 94?
Yeah. Now, what had happened here? Did intention go back and fix and change what had happened?
Change the reality.
What had happened, exactly. They went, intention went back, in a sense, and changed what happened in the first place. So it changed what happened as that reality was unfolding.
This could alter psychotherapy rather radically, couldn't it?
Very good thought. Very, very good thought. Okay. It's very interesting to contemplate any of that.
Really? Wow. So let's go back to the intention. Let's go forward and back and all at the same time to the intention experiment then. I just really wanted to clarify to people listening that time is really different in this consciousness.
Yes.
I received, first of all, there are two things. One is your next intention experiment, which is the next phase of what you're doing, is coming up on March 29th, right?
Exactly. Now, we're working on a number of things. Last year was about establishing that we could have any kind of effect. So we tried relatively simple experiments, and we found we had extraordinary effects. We were really surprised. And we also had them from any distance, because I was running two kinds of different attention experiments. I ran some in front of groups when I was speaking. I was speaking all around the world last year. And I also ran some on the internet, inviting readers from all over the world to send intentions all at the same time. And we found we had effects in every experiment we did, which was quite amazing. That included experiments we had sending intentions to change the light emissions of a leaf. A very simple experiment. That's what we started with. I had a group who had come to a conference of mine in March of 2007, and we decided to have the pilot study there. So we had not only one leaf, but a control leaf. And the scientists didn't know which ones we were sending intention to. They were back in Tucson, Arizona. We were working with Dr. Gary Schwartz and his team at University of Arizona and the Center for Consciousness and Healing. And so we sent intention to one leaf, and our message was to the leaf. Our intention was to make it glow and glow. Now, all living things emit a tiny current of light,
mm-hmm.
a tiny amount of what are called biophoton emission. So our intention was to try to alter that light. And Dr. Schwartz has a fabulous laboratory because he has very, very sensitive CCD cameras that can record any change in this light by counting it, in a sense, photon by photon, and also providing photographs of it. So we had the two leaves, sent intention to one. As soon as we were done, the scientists put them in their equipment, calculated all the results, photographed them, and only at that point did I unblind the study and tell them which one was the one sent intention. Dr. Gary Schwartz calls me up a couple of days later and he says, you won't believe this. The picture of the leaf sent intention is truly glowing. The leaf is glowing compared to the other one.
Wow.
The other one is darker than usual. It even looks like it's neglected. So it has some sort of weird neglect effect. So we were encouraged by this. We rolled it out. We ran it on the internet. It worked. We had a similar, very similar study on the internet. It worked with something like 7,000 people from all over the world participating in it. We ran it in front of a group in California. It worked. So then we moved on to seeds. We decided we wanted to see if we could send intention to make seeds grow faster and sprout earlier, grow faster. So with this experiment, and we've run it something like 5 times now, we had not one set of seeds, but 4 sets of seeds. And either over the internet or in front of a group, if I was talking at a conference, I would engage people to choose one of the sets of seeds, and we would look at a photo of it and send an intention for it to sprout earlier, grow faster than the others. We ran the first one from Sydney, Australia, again sending intention to the target in Tucson, Arizona. And after Dr. Schwartz calculated it, and what happened is, after the event, he didn't know which seeds we sent intention to, he would plant all 4 sets of seeds and then calculate which grew faster and work on the numbers. We found we had an effect. We ran it from Rhinebeck, New York. We found we had an effect. We ran it from South Carolina. We had an effect. And we ran it over the internet with thousands of people around the world. We had an effect. And we found very interestingly that we had our largest effect from the South Carolina group, who were a group of 500 plus healers, experienced healers. So it seems like in that instance, experience counts, because in those instances, the seeds grew twice as high as all of the controls.
Well, didn't you at some...
Remarkable study.
That's very exciting. And didn't you somewhere in my reading have proof that the magnetic and the electrical light of certain healers is very powerful?
I looked at that in my in the intention experiment research.
Mm-hmm.
I was studying what kind of energy we're talking about, and there's a lot of interesting data on this. Dr. Schwartz himself has run studies showing that when a healer is sending healing energy, it actually shows up as an increase in magnetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other studies showing a giant surge of electrical energy. So it doesn't mean that that's the source of it, but there is an increase of energy that seems to have that kind of an effect on magnetic energy, electrical energy. There's this big surge of energy
that somehow is being
That
somehow is being corralled by the attention of the healer.
Yeah. And Dr. Schwartz has even shown that healing intention, he put a healer's hands in his camera, special camera equipment, these very, very light-sensitive cameras, and found that there was a stream of light flowing from their dominant hand when they sent intention. So that itself was also quite amazing.
So we're looking at is of course I'm jumping around saying, does that mean that intentions are electrical or magnetic?
Well, I think that it is more like quantum.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is more of a quantum effect. Any other electrical or magnetic energy would say that it's going to take time to get from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're talking about instantaneous connection.
Mm-hmm. But it still can be energy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. Wow, this is all very exciting, isn't it?
It is really exciting, and I think what's wonderful is what's going on then this year. Having been encouraged by these, we're now moving into a phase where we're running real experiments that have very big implications. Dr. Schwartz and I are working on building a mini Gaia, a little ecosphere that's going to contain animals and primitive plants like brine shrimp. And we'll be putting in temperature gauges and other gauges so that we can see if we can send intention to change the CO2 levels, the carbon dioxide levels.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
If we can, that will have enormous implications. Similarly, we're going to try to see if we can lower the temperature a bit and see if that, you know, that will also have amazing implications.
So you're saying that with intention, people can raise and lower the temperature of the atmosphere, of people, of animals? Is that right?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm asking the question. I'm not saying it can happen. I'm just saying, let's ask the question and let's test it. And this is part of my question, a big question, which is how far can we go with intention? And I'm working with, you know, I've worked with a few other scientists, too. I'm working with a scientist called Rustam Roy, who is a professor of materials science and arguably one of the world's experts on water. And we are planning a big intention experiment where we're going to try to change the bacteria of water. Bacteria mutate very easily, and there have been some intention experiments showing people can change some, they can help certain bacteria, I think it's E. coli bacteria, mutate to a certain state through intention. So we're going to see, basically, if we can take bad bacteria and polluted water and turn it into good bacteria.
That's wonderful. Now, Emoto's done some of that, hasn't he?
He's done work looking at the effect of love on the crystal structure of water. So, in other words, he's sent love to water and then frozen it to the crystal structure. But these have been demonstrations, and I like Emoto a lot. He's contacted me, and we're trying to plan an intention experiment together. But I've done several on water so far, too.
That'd be wonderful.
But I think he's very keen to have it done in a really stringent scientific condition, because I think his have been demonstrations, but we need to have something where it's done in stringent scientific via the stringent scientific method. So we're looking at things like that. But, I mean, water has huge implications in every way. If we can affect polluted water, that's one thing. We could look at the possibility of intention being used to help clean up the waterways of the world.
Right, which is pretty crucial for the survival of the planet, isn't it?
Absolutely. But think also of what we are and what plants are. We are about 80% water. Plants are about 100% water. So this kind of a study also has implications for our own health, cleaning up us and also cleaning up our food supply.
Isn't it interesting, because we've been hearing that like 2012 or in and around that time, we're supposed to either become able to be sovereign over our difficulties, or, you know, to be self-creating, aren't we? Or else we lose the battle. That's what I've heard anyway.
Well, it's very interesting, Veronica, because what we found looking at 2012 is that I've been very interested in looking at the effect of the sun on living things on the earth. The sun has, you know, as we know, the sun throws a lot of gaseous stuff toward Earth, solar flares and coronal mass ejections. And scientists have long understood that that kind of solar activity has a profound effect on the Earth's geomagnetic shield, which in turn has a profound effect on us and all living things, particularly the two major engines of the human body, the heart and the brain. But it also has a huge effect on our psychic ability. And interestingly enough, intention increases with geomagnetic activity. ESP increases when the Earth is quiet, you know, when there isn't a lot of geomagnetic activity. But the reverse is true with mind over matter.
Hmm.
So there's going to be, you know, with solar activity, it comes in waves, and it goes through an 11-year cycle. Well, the next solar activity, this cycle, is just beginning now, and it's going to peak in 2012.
Interesting.
At a level it's never been before. So
and that increases the capacity of intention to really make a difference, eh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this could be the case, and this could be what the Mayans prophesied. I don't know, but that certainly is a scientific explanation.
Well, certainly the waking up to our connection and our ability to create the reality, all of that is a part of the prophecy. It's how we do it and what we do with it, probably, eh?
Yes. Yes, exactly. That's the important issue, is what we do with it.
Now, I just received, this is on a smaller level, I just received your, just before I called you, just received an email about someone who had had a serious burn.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I do. I just wrote it.
I loved it. I went, oh, perfect. I'm just about to talk to Lynn. But do you want to tell people about it? Because it's wonderful. It's just a nice home-based story, too.
A wonderful story, Veronica, that happened this weekend. I was in Dallas, and I met one of our members of our Intention Experiment website. Daniel, his name is. And on our website, it's because it's a social network, people can create little groups with each other. And he and his friends on the site had created an intention group, and they were sending intention to each other. Anyway, he was in a terrible gas explosion, and he really badly burned his hand. He got rushed to hospital, and the doctor said he needs skin graft. So his wife contacted his little group and said, please, can you start sending intention to Daniel? Because, you know, please send him intention to heal. And this is followed from our own website, because we do a thing called Intention of the Week, where we invite people to come on and send intention to particular people with some sort of problem, whether it's an illness or they have a child runaway or something's happened to them. And we've had all kinds of interesting results. But in this case of Daniel, we have actually a study here and a control, in a sense. We have a case study and a control, because Daniel was then, the group on the website began sending him intention regularly using the whole powering up protocol that I distilled from talking to a lot of intention masters. I talked to lots of people like Qigong masters and master healers to kind of come up with what techniques they use and to see what the common ones are, to put together a simple program people can use to maximize their own intention. So this group were using this. They sent it to Daniel. And 5 days later, the doctor said, you can go home. You don't know if you need skin graft. And in fact, you're something of a medical miracle. Can we study you? I cannot figure how you healed so fast. Meanwhile, his cohort, one of the other members of his team, was badly burned in the exact same way. He was still in hospital. He was not somebody who believed in the power of intention. He was still in hospital 2 weeks after that, and he went ahead and had the skin graft.
Oh, my.
So it was a really interesting example, as well as a heartwarming one, of the power of intention.
And also group power.
And group power.
I guess we don't really know for sure if it had to be group, but I feel strongly that the group has a huge impact.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we started this out, this whole Intention of the Week, because we had a guy called Don Barry who contacted me last month or so and said, I've got ankylosing spondylitis, which is when your spine is fused. I'll be one of your intention experiments. I've got loads of medical studies showing I can't move my spine at all. I'm frozen.
And it hurts too, doesn't it?
Anything. And it hurts a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you can do anything to fix this, then that'll be an interesting result. So we put him on the website, and the readers on their own back started to send him intention twice a week. And I encouraged him to keep a diary. And he contacted me a few weeks later to say, I'm feeling a bit better. And then a few months later, he wrote me again, and he said, do you remember me? I don't have any pain anymore.
Wow, isn't that great?
I know, it was amazing. And then he said, I went to the doctor and I was able to move my chest, and the doctor was absolutely just speechless, because, you know, you're not supposed to move at all with this problem. And so that really sparked us to run this every week. And we've had a number of people, MS people, MS victims, patients with cancer, say two patients with cancer claim that they felt some sort of spontaneous remission. And we even had a woman with ask us to send intention to her way. And we found at the end of 3 weeks after we did, she wrote me excitedly to say that her daughter had come home, initiated contact, and was communicating with her now. And also, she changed her very angry MySpace page to pastel pink.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
You know, I'm reminded of, you know, the new thought to religions and so on. Well, back into the Christian Science, they always talk about divine mind. And I'm going, well, this is kind of a different way of expressing kind of divine mind. They always said there's one mind, And they did a lot of healing with that. And I'm like, they're kind of getting into the field or getting into the intentional life.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think it's very similar ideas, dovetailing, the new thought churches, and using intention in the way that we're talking about.
Yeah, we're getting a little more specific and a little clearer. What's your experiment for the 29th? And we also want to hear about your websites. What are the names of your websites, and how can people get involved?
Okay. Well, we're hoping that the 29th, if we can finish work on it, will include the Gaia experiment, where we're trying to lower temperature. We're hoping that we'll have that done by then, which will be exciting.
You're intending to have it done.
Sending an intention, a very strong intention, to have this Gaia experiment done. But we've had some setbacks in the equipment, but we're working on that at the moment. And then we're also working on that water study. And then I have something else very exciting to talk about for the autumn. We're putting together a giant peace experiment. I've been approached by, when I was speaking to Deepak Chopra, I was on his show not long ago, and I mentioned to him that I wanted to do a study to try to lower violence. And he said, you know, I really like that idea. I'd like to get my group, the Alliance for New Humanity, to work with you on that. So I've talked to them, and they're very excited. They want to do that. And then I discussed it with the Association for Global New Thought, which is an umbrella group for the New Thought churches. And they love the idea. They want to be involved. Then I talked to the Oneness Foundation about this, and they want to be involved.
Wonderful!
We are creating a giant super group of intention, and the thought is to look at running these series of experiments where we'll be sending intention to areas of violence around the world and monitoring whether we have an effect. So it won't just be a peace meditation. We're actually going to have scientists using scientific methods look at before and afterward to see if we have any effect. And we're thinking of running it in the week right after 9/11.
Excellent. So what are you doing about the election?
Being voting like every citizen. Being globally neutral.
Well, I think that there's a potential evolution in terms of politics, probably around the world, which might be good to focus upon as well, eh?
Well, I think what we could do is send an intention, vote for the party of our choice, and send an intention that they're wise in their decision making.
And that there's a kind of a win-win for people, maybe.
Yes,
you know.
Absolutely.
So how do people... Oh, you better talk about your websites, because I believe people really want to sign up and join in on the power.
Well, if they want to join us with the intention experiment, that's www.theintentionexperiment.com. And that, you know, to be part of the experiment, all you have to do is register, and we send you information about what to do. And you also get weekly information from me on what's happening with all the intention experiments and what we're planning and what's going to be going on next and what dates to put in your diary. And you'll notice very soon we're going to be putting on our countdown, which counts down every day how many days, hours, and minutes till the next intention experiment. And then we also have a website called Living the Field, which is www.livingthefield.com. And this website is devoted to bringing these ideas, it's a broader church, it's bringing these ideas into your life. So many years ago, a couple of years ago when I first did the field, when I first published it, readers around the world wrote to me and said, you know, I really like this book. How do I live this? And so that really prompted, that's always the wrong question to ask a researcher. Like, we spent 4 or 5 years putting together a whole course called Living the Field, which looks at how to extend human potential in every way, from remote viewing to healing, to how to bring these concepts into your life, how to live in unity. Because, you know, if we're all connected by a quantum energy field, we have to really restructure the way we live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the moment, we live lives based on a scientific notion of us being separate entities.
Right.
And so it's been all about that, bringing field ideas into work, raising children in unity, looking at new field communities, all sorts of ideas like that, a new field philosophy. So we've been working on that, and that's actually, I'll be running a series of seminars called Living with Intention in America this year. I have them running in Chicago, Los Angeles, Portland area, and Boston all year. So we have that as well on our website.
Wonderful. Also, I interviewed somebody on the different kinds of kids that are coming in very awake and really, you know, alert to universal, so on, and not necessarily being able to cope in the way our society has gone. And I noticed you have, as I said, I was listening to the Living the Field CDs. You have a huge section on children. Can you talk about helping people raise children in this consciousness right now?
Yes. It's a great passion of mine because I have 2 children myself and 2 girls. And I'm very interested in trying to raise children away from the competitive and separatist notions that are our current society.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, school is entirely geared towards honoring competition, honoring the individual. The sports situation, the whole learning technique that we use now is all based on separation and competition. So I really look at a number of things. It's a whole course worth. But I look at a number of things. One is just encouraging spirit in children. Children are born knowing how to use extended human potential. I mean, they walk around in a permanent state of hallucination when they're under 5, and we call them imaginary friends.
Mm-hmm.
But they have natural meditative states. They have natural ability to intend, and it's about encouraging and fostering that rather than squashing it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there is a psychic knot between mother and child that definitely occurs. There's a lot of evidence for it. So encouraging that in yourself, teaching children how to meditate from a very young age, allowing them and honoring ESP and intention, and teaching them to do that.
When you say psychic knot, do you mean just like a complete knowing, a oneness between them, or?
Yeah, many stories. There are many, many stories, documented stories, of mothers who have gone out for the evening and suddenly smelled smoke and insisted on leaving and going home, and running in and finding that the babysitter was asleep and the house was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And running in and grabbing their child. I mean, there are a number of instances of that that we've written about. So that kind of, you know, information knot, there's a lot of evidence that mother and child have that kind of particular and special psychic ability.
So you're talking about actually recognizing it, using it, and building it rather than not ignoring it.
Exactly, and rather than discrediting it, understanding this occurs, that we speak to each other, we affect each other, we inform each other on a different level, and also we, you know, we have, everybody has this capacity, it's not just the gifted.
Mm-hmm.
So honoring that. Then in terms of other things with children, it's also honoring, you know, teaching children appreciation and gratitude and giving back rather than just getting and, you know, being grabby and getting. Teaching children through holistic methods. I studied a lot of native cultures in also answering the question, how do you live the field? I looked at many, many, many cultures, and I was fascinated to see how they teach children in the main. And many of these native traditions are about allowing children to learn through observation rather than through passive listening and testing. And what they do is, instead of criticizing and correcting, they allow the child to observe. And then when the child feels ready to do so, does he go off and perform the function by himself.
So that's kind of him rising into his knowing.
That's exactly it.
So it's not age.
That's the way of putting it.
And it's not an age-related kind of thing.
No, and it doesn't have a test or a time frame. And then when the child is ready, he comes back to the tribe and he shows them what he can do. And at that point, instead of criticizing, they applaud him. They all say, fabulous, you've done it now.
Hmm.
You know, so there is no pressure, there is no testing, there is no criticism. There's not all those things. It's the honoring the child's own path and time and allowing him demonstrate something only when he's competent at it.
So, how old are your children?
11 and 18.
So, have you been able, I mean, I know you've done most of your research on this recently, but have you been able to raise them this way, or have you put them in the regular schools?
My first girl, I put into liberal and alternative schools, and found that what worked best for her was a very traditional English school.
Oh. Her preference.
Oh, her preference. And so we honored that. However, you know, we've taught her from certain meditative techniques, which she used at a very young age, and allowed her to honor that kind of idea within herself. And also honor, you know, a sense of, I think, for her to understand and honor spiritual, certain spiritual understandings of things, and to make that a priority in her life. And I think it has to be something that rubs off on children when it's the kind of work that we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we drag them into the kind of work that we do, too. They come to our conferences, they sell books, they are influenced by the people that they hear about. So they hear about that also in terms of the kind of work that we do, and we make that an important part of it. And I see with my, you know, I have just one who's really grown up to be able to see what's happened to her, but I hear her all the time being very influenced in the sense of wanting to, at one point she was talking about being a psychotherapist for cancer patients, and another time she talked about being a human rights lawyer. So we take them on marches. I mean, we were marching to prevent the EU from outlawing alternative medicine. We started a whole countrywide march, and they were part of it, holding placards with us.
Oh, good.
We try to bring them into the kind of work that we're doing and make it part of their lives.
And is your younger...
My youngest one, I want to do something different from the school system that we have. I mean, I did try homeschooling with my senior girl. It didn't work for her. She was much, much more of a social person. So it's a kind of way of... What I've done with both of them is to put them in liberal situations where we are in England, and English schools are very, very tight.
Are they?
Very old-fashioned in a lot of ways. So we have them in schools where it's not pressured, there's not tests to, you have to, you don't have to perform to a certain level or you'll get kicked out as you are in many other places. And we augment that by even further, a further liberal attitude. But luckily in our school, we can be as wacky as we want.
So your girls are living intentionally.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah, they seem to be interested in that.
Well, I think they're very interested in the work that we do because it's sort of incumbent. It's not, you know, mom and dad don't just go off to work. Mom and dad are kind of living this 24/7 with this company and with people that we work with. And so they're very much involved in that. You know, and we run seminars now and we're both running them. And so we're working with people living, you know, working with them and living with intention. So the children very much are part of that.
Wonderful. And you have a book on raising children. I haven't ordered it yet, but it's for parents and grandparents, right?
We have a download that is about children in the field, which is, by download, I mean our course is a four-year course that covers all those different subjects I mentioned earlier. For those people who just want a slice of it, like a particular slice, like they just want the children, and the field and raising children in the field, we have just that as a download for them.
So you have a course, and that's a four-year course on how one can massage one's lifestyle and one's thinking in order to live this fully?
Yeah, we call it living the field because we wanted to provide people with a full knowledge of the new science of in all kinds of areas that would relate to this kind of human potential, the new science of human potential, a philosophy of the field, or a kind of learning space for extending all sorts of human potential. From learning remote viewing, we have a course in remote viewing. We've used expert remote viewers for that, and a course in healing, and a course in just developing EST, dream precognition, all of that stuff. But then we also have bringing the field into your life, living in a more unified fashion, like children in the field, bringing the field to work, the field in your community, understanding a variety of things about holistic and energy healing systems. Mm. That's the whole gambit of those too. So it's a kind of one-stop shop for living holistically.
Wonderful, and that'll be on your website too.
That's on our website as well.
Mm-hmm. And that's the Living the Field website?
Yes, it is.
Now, we're almost at the end of our time, but who are you, Lynn? How were you raised? Were you raised in human potential, or did you have to break into this? Or who's Lynn McTaggart?
I was a very traditional kid. Grew up in the 50s and 60s, and I was a Roman Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were just good people from working class stock who had... my dad had his own company. They were just good people. I had a very happy childhood. And I just was somebody who was very interested in alternative things from a young age. I was into health food at 16. And I was a very early meditator, and I was very interested in, you know, I suppose I'm a baby boomer who was very interested in all the seeds of change in the 60s and 70s. And that sense of possibility has never left me. And so, but I'm also a very fact-based, hard-nosed investigative journalist by background. So I suppose those two impulses wedded together with the field, and that kind of became the work I was supposed to do.
That's wonderful that you really have come up with some very, very inspiring material, and I'm excited. And I have to release you now, and we'll have to tune into your websites, and I would like to tune into the Intention Experiment myself.
Wonderful. Well, please make sure to join us on March 29th, and that's 5 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time. So I guess for East Coast people, that would be 1 p.m. because you'll be on Daylight Savings Time. But for any information, please just come to theintentionexperiment.com.
Wonderful. Well, I'm very inspired by this conversation with you, and thank you so much for your time, Lynn.
Thanks very much, Veronica. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure, and thank you for the work in the world.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Thanks.